Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we're doing a deep dive into, well, the way water flows across the entire globe, and more specifically, the tech that's making it possible for anyone to see that flow.
We're looking at the documentation for a web app called Global Watersheds. And it's really, it's quietly changing the game for how we map this stuff.
Right. It's like a shortcut for anyone who needs to understand hydrography, whether you're a scientist or just, curious about where the water in your local river comes from.
Exactly. The whole point is to let you find upstream watersheds and downstream flow paths for, well, pretty much any spot on Earth. And it does it using the absolute latest data sets.
And the core idea here, the concept we keep coming back to, is the watershed. Some people call it a drainage basin.
Same thing.
It sounds simple, but it's such a powerful idea. It's the whole area upstream of a point where any drop of rain or snow will eventually flow downhill to that one single spot.
And that's why it's so fundamental. If you're studying floods, pollution, habitats, water management,
Yeah.
you are studying a watershed. It's the natural unit.
Water connects us all.
It really does. And the people who built this, they weren't happy with the tools that were out there. A lot of the existing software was just incredibly slow.
Resource intensive.
Totally. Their mission was to get accurate results, but to do it fast enough that you could actually do big global studies on a regular computer, not some supercomputer, that speed is what makes it so powerful.
And that accessibility is what we want to dig into. Let's start with just, using it. How does it work?
It's almost shockingly simple. You find a spot on the map, say on a riverbank,
Just one click.
you click delineate, and boom, almost instantly you see a red line pop up, which is the watershed boundary, and all the blue lines, which are the rivers and streams flowing into your point.
But what if your outlet isn't just a tiny point? What if you're interested in a whole lake or a stretch of coastline?
So they have an advanced feature for that. You can actually draw a line or even a whole polygon on the map to define a larger outlet.
And when you say large, how large are we talking?
Well, the source material gives a pretty wild example. You could apparently outline the entire Caspian Sea.
The world's largest inland sea, that is a genuinely global scale.
It is. Now, there are some caveats with that feature. It only works for upstream paths, and you have to be the lower resolution mode.
And it only uses one specific data set, the Merritt Hydro one.
Right, which we'll get into. It's really designed for those massive regional scale questions where you don't need perfect pinpoint accuracy right at the edge.
So that's the upstream part. The app has two main functions, right? Upstream delineate watershed and the other one.
Downstream trace flow, which is just as important. It finds the approximate path that water would take from your point all the way to the ocean or, an inland basin.
One of those endorheic basins.
Exactly. But there's a huge but here. And the docs are very clear about this.
Which is?
It only considers surface flow. It's looking at the shape of the land. There's
Yeah.
no idea about underground aquifers or man-made stuff like canals or pipelines.
So this is a map of the natural world, at least as the elevation data sees it.
You got it. It's not tracking water through the New York City sewer system.
Fair enough. And for people who want to actually use this data, say programmers or GIS folks, you can download it.
Oh, yeah. They have a bunch of formats. GeoPackage is the one they recommend, it's the most modern. But they also have shapefiles, KML for Google Earth.
And GeoJSON, which is a big one for web developers.
Right, because it's just plain text. You can move it around easily, plug it into other applications. The data isn't trapped inside the app, which is a really big deal.
What's fascinating here is how did they do it? How did they pull off this balance of speed and accuracy on a global scale?
That's the real story. They built this whole thing because everything else was just too clunky and slow for the kind of work they wanted to do.
You couldn't just study a huge river basin easily.
Not without a ton of prep work and computing power. And that roadblock led them to what the source material calls the rediscovery of the hybrid method.
I love that rediscovery, like they found some ancient secret.
Well, it's a clever application of existing ideas. So to get it, you have to understand the two main data types here, raster and vector.
Okay, so let's get into that technical engine. Raster data is what? Like a photo.
That's a great way to put it. It's a grid of pixels. Each pixel has an elevation value. The data they use, Merritt Hydro, has a 90-meter resolution. Super detailed, very accurate.
But the downside is that if you're mapping a huge watershed, you're processing millions, maybe billions of these tiny pixels.
Which is incredibly slow and takes up a ton of memory.
Okay, so then you have the other type, vector data.
Right. Instead of a grid, vector data uses predefined shapes. points, lines, and in this case, polygons. The whole world is pre-divided into these little chunks called unit catchments.
And how big are those?
With the Merritt Basin's data, they average about 40 square kilometers.
So using those is fast because the computer is just grabbing shapes that already exist.
Lightning fast. It's just stitching them together like a quilt. But the problem is your click on the map almost never lands perfectly on the edge of one of those shapes.
So the boundary is always a bit off. It's imprecise.
Exactly. And that's where the hybrid method comes in. It's the secret sauce.
It combines the speed of the vector with the accuracy of the raster.
It does. It's so elegant. First, it uses the fast vector method to grab all the upstream catchments. That's like 99% of the watershed. And it does it in a split second.
So it gets the big picture almost instantly.
Right. And then it zooms in on that one final unit catchment, the one your click actually landed in. They call it the home catchment.
And that's where it switches gears.
That is precisely where it switches. Only for that small 40 square kilometer area does it use the slow, high-resolution raster data to perfectly split the catchment right at your point.
Ah, so it's not processing the whole world in high detail, just one tiny piece.
Exactly. It uses a trick called windowed reading to only load that small piece of the raster grid into memory. It's a brilliant efficiency hack.
So you get the big, fast answer, and then it focuses all its expensive effort on getting that last little bit of the boundary just right.
Now, there is a trade-off. The default is what they call higher precision mode, which does that hybrid split.
But not always.
Not always. If you try to map something enormous, say, over 50,000 square kilometers.
Which is almost the size of Costa Rica.
Yeah, a huge area.
Yeah.
The app automatically switches to the lower precision mode.
Why would it do that? Why not just wait longer for the better result?
Because for a truly massive basin, like the entire Amazon, that tiny bit of precision at the outlet is negligible. In lower precision mode, it just skips the raster part entirely and stitches the vector shapes together. The outlet point gets moved a tiny bit, but you save a massive amount of processing time.
It's an intelligent trade-off based on scale. That makes a lot of sense.
And speaking of appearances versus accuracy, let's talk about how these maps look.
Right. The lines can look a bit jagged and pixelated sometimes.
Yeah, that's just a side effect of the grid data. But they give you options. There's a simplify button and a beautify button.
And beautify sounds good, but there's a catch, isn't there?
A big one. The documentation is very clear. It's purely for aesthetics. It uses algorithms to make the lines look smooth and nice on a presentation map.
Right.
But it makes the file size bigger. And the smooth line can actually be further away from the true physical location.
So if you're an engineer, you want the jagged line.
You want the raw, jagged truth.
Okay. So now that we know how the engine works, let's talk about the fuel, the actual data that's driving all this.
Right. The data ecosystem.
The main one, the preferred source, is Merritt Hydro. It's recent. From 2021, nearly global, and has that 90-meter resolution.
And that's the one that allows for the high-precision mode we were just talking about.
Then there's an older one, Hydro HCEs. They call it venerable.
Which is a polite way of saying old. It's from 2013, and it's less accurate, especially way up north, like above 60 degrees latitude. The terrain data it was based on just wasn't as good in icy, remote areas.
And then for users in the U.S., there's a third option.
Yes, a direct link to the USGS. And for the continental U.S., that's usually the best, most detailed data you can get. It even includes things like river names.
But the data just stops dead at the border.
Like a brick wall. So it's great, but only if your watershed is entirely within the U.S.
If we connect this to the bigger picture,
yeah,
it's not just about drawing lines on a map. It's about what's happening inside those lines.
Absolutely. And that's where the thematic map layers come in. These are what give the watershed context. They show the human impact.
Let's run through them. First up is population density.
Yep, using 2020 data. But there's a funny thing to look out for. The documentation warns you that you'll sometimes see these really sharp, sudden changes in population density right on a national border.
Like a perfect straight line where the population suddenly drops.
Exactly. And that's not real. It's just an artifact from stitching together different countries' census data, which were all collected a bit differently.
Good to know. Then there's land cover, which shows you what's on the ground. Forests, cities, wetlands.
Crucial for understanding runoff. And then for agriculture, there's the irrigated area layer.
And the documentation makes a really important distinction here. It's not the area that is being irrigated.
No, and this is key. It's the area equipped for irrigation, the AEI. It's the land that has the pumps and canals and infrastructure ready to be irrigated.
So the potential, not the reality.
Right. The actual amount of water being used in any given year could be much, much lower. If you're a researcher, that's a massive distinction to be aware of.
Okay, now for what I think is the coolest layer, and it's pretty new, the GRACE Total Water Storage Trend.
This is just incredible science. The GRACE satellites measure tiny changes in Earth's gravity field.
To track water.
To track changes in water mass, all of it, rivers, groundwater, soil, moisture, ice. It's not telling you how much water there is in total. It's telling you if that total amount is going up or down over time since 2002.
I could map the watershed for the Colorado River, turn on the GRACE layer, and see if that entire basin has been gaining or losing water mass for the last two decades.
That is exactly what you could do. You can see the long-term trend of depletion or accumulation right there on the map. It's powerful stuff.
And finally, they have a layer for dams, which are, of course, the most direct way humans alter a river's flow.
So you have the natural system, and then you have all these layers showing the human pressures on that system.
Now, we do need to talk about limitations. The creators are very upfront that this is not foolproof. Computerized delineation isn't always right.
No, if the result looks weird, it probably is weird.
Yeah.
There are certain types of landscapes where these automated systems just struggle.
Like what?
Well, really flat land, for one. Think of Florida or California's Central Valley. If there's barely any slope, the computer has a hard time figuring out which way the water is supposed to go.
And deserts, I imagine, or frozen places.
For sure. Deserts don't have well-defined channels.
Yeah.
And in places like Greenland, everything is covered in ice, which confuses the elevation model.
What about land where the water just disappears underground?
That's the trickiest of all. Karst landscapes, like the Yucatan Peninsula. So much water goes into caves and underground rivers that the whole concept of a surface watershed doesn't really mean much there.
And then, of course, cities. All our storm drains and canals completely rewire the natural flow.
Right. The computer's trying to follow the rules of nature in a place where we've completely rewritten them.
There's one last technical problem they had to solve, which is just about display, showing all the rivers.
Oh, yeah. This is a classic data visualization problem. If you took a huge river system like the Mississippi.
Which has, what, something like 170,000 individual river segments?
Over 170,000, yeah. If you tried to draw all of those on the map at once, you would just crash the user's browser. It's way too much data.
So what's the solution?
They prune it. The app only shows the bigger, more significant streams, the higher order ones. It keeps the map clean and fast.
But if you download the data for your research, you get everything.
You get all 170,000 reaches. Then it's up to you to decide what to show.
So what does this all mean?
I mean, on a technical level, it's pretty clear. This is a super fast, really clever hybrid method that makes global hydrography accessible to basically everyone. It solves a huge problem.
But the creators talk about a bigger goal, a more philosophical one.
They do. The main point wasn't just to build a tool for engineers. It was to increase, and I'm quoting here, watershed consciousness.
That's a great phrase. The idea that if you know what watershed you're in, you instantly see your connection to everything upstream and downstream.
The flow of nutrients, animals, pollution. It all becomes visible. It goes back to that old environmentalist idea from the 60s.
We all live in a watershed.
And we are all downstream of someone else.
So to leave you with a final thought on that, we learned that the high-precision hybrid method, it pours all this expensive computing power into splitting that one tiny local unit catchment, that final 40 square kilometers.
There's all that effort for the most local piece of the puzzle.
Now, think about that technical struggle. How hard it is for an algorithm to find that precise local boundary. And then think about those human impact layers we discussed. The dams, the population, the irrigation.
Doesn't that struggle perfectly mirror our own real-world challenge? The difficulty of separating where our local human influence ends and the big natural regional flow of water actually begins.
It really makes you wonder, when we see a trend on that GRACE map, that change in total water storage, how much of it is from the physics of the whole region, and how much of it is just the sum total of all the tiny decisions being made in each of those small local catchments?
It reminds us that figuring out that local boundary, that's often the hardest and maybe the most important part of the whole picture.